Hey everybody, DJ B here, aka Brian Sanchez, coming to you with this week's version of the Sports Report. Got a good show lined up for you today. Gonna have a lot of in-show baseball updates because the wild card is happening. It's happening soon and it's happening now. There's only 2 days left for the regular season, 1.5 if you include the games that start today, and all of that is underway. But first, Ozzie Guillen. Always the troublemaker, and this time he finally worked his way right out of Chicago. Yesterday, Monday morning, he asked for his release, and he got it. Within 8 hours, the White Sox did not mess around. They just ditched him. It seems like GM Kenny Williams, he's had to put up with that mouth of Ozzy for years, and finally he's had enough. It just wasn't worth it anymore. So, just got rid of him. But Ozzy, for what it's worth, he wins. He may get annoying, he may cause problems, but he wins. During his 8 years, he did win them a World Series title. So that's better than most managers get, both the 8-year span and the World Series title. But one problem I had was with the GM, Kenny Williams, who's always thought low of Ozzie Guillen, wasn't a big fan of him, said about this whole thing, and I quote, "Was it time for a change? I don't think so." And to me, that kind of seemed like Kenny Williams was being a little rat there. He's wanted him gone for years. And now that he's finally gone, he's playing the role of, I didn't want him to go. I want him to stay. I think he's good. Just trying to make himself look better, not really telling the truth. And I don't usually support that. But it seems like Ozzie Guillen is just on the verge of inking a deal through 2015 with the Florida Marlins. The money hasn't been discussed yet. It's just going to be a long-term deal. But this is big for the Marlins. This is going to get them credibility from the manager position, which has been a revolving door for the last 8 years. And it's going to get them a face of the franchise because they have players move in and out. And finally, they'll have a manager who can be the face of the franchise. But not all of the baseball news is happening over on the East Coast. We're having plenty of problems over here, and I'm not just talking about the Giants offense. I'm talking about the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants getting in a turf war. The A's, for 3 years now, have wanted to move to San Jose, but the Giants won't let them because it's within their region where they kind of conquer the region, and every baseball team is given about 50 miles within their ballpark that belongs to them, and San Jose falls within that for San Francisco. And the Giants don't want the A's moving to San Jose because then they become the hot ticket. Giants have a minor league team there, so they could lose revenue because everyone will be going to the A's games. But finally, it seems like the A's may have an advantage. They haven't had an advantage since about 2002, back when they were winning, that the Giants have gotten rid of Peter McGowan, the CEO, and they're naming Larry Baer the new CEO. But you don't just get to make that change. You don't just get to lose one and pick up another one. All the owners in the league need to vote and approve it. You need to have over 3/4 of the 30 managers. Let you do the math yourself. But one of them is Lou Wolf, the A's manager. And he's going to say no. He's going to not approve it because he's going to say, I'm not going to approve your deal until you let us move into San Jose. Then Lou Wolf can get a couple of his buddies. Say, you know what? Help me out here. Say no to the Giants ownership change. Not the ownership change, CEO change. If you say no to it too, you know, maybe we'll be a little bit more favorable down the road in a trade situation. And if he can get enough people to say no and block it, the Giants will have no choice but to let him move into San Jose. Kind of turns into a weird power trip, kind of almost a mafia scene, but with baseball owners. And they have the right to do that. If he can convince them to do it, he can't outright say we're doing it to help him in a trade later. But everybody knows things go on behind closed doors that nobody knows about. But not everybody keeps things behind closed doors. You should, if you're Michael Vick, but he doesn't. He went straight out and insulted referees. Said that he was unhappy about the roughing the passer calls that aren't being given to Michael Vick. He says, if your hand even gets close to the helmet of Tom Brady or Drew Brees, and if Hunter Hornstein or Brock Bieler listening out there is nothing against Brady, I know you guys love him. I love him too. so don't get mad at me. But if your hand gets close to one of their helmets, within a foot, there's a flag thrown for roughing the passer. But Michael Vick, you can light him up, and they're not going to throw it. And Vick's, he complained about it last year, but not like this. Very public, very loud, letting people know how unhappy he is. And I'm on his side. But his whole little complaining about it isn't going to help him at all. It's just not going to do anything. And if anything, it's going to make it worse because it comes down to two things. One, it's a perception. There's a good chance that people just generally don't like Michael Vick. You did what you do with the dog fighting, killing all those dogs. People find out about that. You go to jail. But that wasn't enough. You had to come back to the NFL and make $100 million after what you did. People don't like him for both of those reasons. So maybe a referee likes him less, wants to see him get hit. And when he gets hit, he lets it slide. Are you supposed to do that? No. Are you supposed to let your emotions get into the game? No. But does it? Yeah, they're human, just like you and me. So that's what they're going to do. And another perception is more about football play. He's a very athletic running quarterback. So when he scrambles, when a quarterback scrambles, you're allowed to hit them. If you hit their helmet, you hit their helmet. They're just like any other player once they're in the scramble. And I think once Vic starts to run at all, they consider it a scramble. Even if he's just moving to the left or right of the pocket a little bit, they say he's going to start to scramble because that's what he does. And when he gets hit in the helmet, they let it slide. Is it right? I don't think so. I feel like they're judging him differently than they judge everybody else. But that's just me and Michael Vick. And we both agree on that. So we're going to take it to a break now. When we get back, we're going to talk about the wild card races, and they are hot right now. There's only today's games which are underway and tomorrow's games left, and nothing is even close to being decided. So we'll get to that after the break. Stay here on the Sports Report with DJ B on radio.dominican.edu. And we're back here on the Sports Report with DJ B here on radio.dominican.edu. This is the last Sports Report before the end of the regular season. I can't believe it's over already. It seems like it just started yesterday. Seems like I was just watching the Giants raise the banner, and now I'm watching them close out a sad, sad season. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about the wild card races, because those are what's hot right now. And the Red Sox are what's been cold right now. They have been struggling badly. They have lost 17 of their last 22 after they lost 6-3 to the Baltimore Orioles last night. And it's been bad, but they're turning it around today. They are up 7-3 in the top of the six, which is big because they have fallen down into a tie for the wild card with the Rays. The Rays have been on fire. September, they've been the opposite of the Red Sox, and they're playing the Yankees. So conventional wisdom might show you'd rather play the Orioles than the Yankees right now, but it's just not true. The Yankees are resting their players because their playoff spot is secure. They're getting their rotation in order. They may even be a little out of it. Where the Orioles, this is their World Series right here. They're playing a division opponent, and they have a chance to keep them out of the playoffs. That's something you want to do at all cost. So if I was a team, I'd rather be playing the Yankees than the Orioles right now, as crazy as it seems, because it's purely about who's willing to give the effort right now. And another note about that Red Sox game tonight, Jacoby Ellsbury hit another home run tonight. That's number 32 on the season. I don't think anybody saw this coming from Jacoby. He's thrown his name right into the MVP race for the AL. 32 home runs and 38 stolen bases is huge from a leadoff hitting center fielder. He's hitting 323, and he just flied out to shallow left, so he could drop that down to 322. But it still doesn't take anything away from how great this season is, and he's definitely in the MVP race. I might even give it to him. And as far as the Rays go, they are down 3-2 in the top of the seventh. They have Jake McGee on the mound right now, so they're into the bullpen. Brett Gardner at the plate. And Tampa Bay went up 2-0 early in the second inning, and they've given up a run in each the third, fifth, and sixth. And they need to win this game, since it looks like Boston's got this wrapped up, unless they pull off the chokes of all chokes and in the middle of their struggle lose a four-run lead to the Orioles late in the game. So this loss would put the Rays down one game with one game left tomorrow. So not only would they have to win, but they would need the Red Sox to lose. And that's not a position you want to put yourself in. So they're going to need to score some runs. They got three innings to score two runs. I think they can do it, because I don't think the Yankees will bring in Mariano. I don't think they'll even bring in their top three relievers. I think they're just going to throw kids at them and hope they get it done, resting their old veteran team. So that's the update for the AL wild card. But the NL wild card isn't as close, because the Rays and Red Sox are tied. But the Braves are only one game up on the Cardinals, and that's one that's been shrinking fast. Yesterday they played the Phillies. They had an early 2-0 lead, and they lost it. And once they lost it and were facing Cliff Lee, you lose the game. You got to take advantage of beating Cliff Lee early, and you got to stay on him, because once he figures it out, you're not going to get a hit. And so today early, they went down 1-0 on a Chase Utley home run. That was his first home run, and it seemed like forever, but it's only been about a month, which for him is forever. But it only got worse from there for the Braves. They are down 7-0 going into the bottom of the eighth, and it is ugly. They have three hits. Now, some people might have seen this coming, because the Braves trotted out struggling Derek Lowe to play this game. And Derek Lowe is 9-16 on the season. And that's not a record you want going for you when you're in a must-win game. And it shows. The Phillies had four by the fourth inning, put up two more in the fifth, got it up to six, and just tacked one on in the seventh. So the Phillies are up big. It looks like Atlanta's going to lose, but that only matters if St. Louis takes advantage. And you would think they'd be able to take advantage since they're playing Houston, but you'd be wrong. They are down in Houston. It is the top of the fourth. Granted, the Cardinals are in the middle of a four-run inning, but after three, they were down 5-0 to Houston. But former Giants prospect Henry Sosa is on the mound, and I saw this kid pitch a couple times in the minors. He never made it to the pros for the Giants. But anytime he's on the mound, you're doomed to have a big inning because he has dominating stuff, but he cannot control it at all. And he's given up four in the fourth, and there's only one out. So he's not even close to out of it. Sosa was the key piece in the Jeff Kepinger trade, which I think worked out beautifully for the Giants because I love Jeff Kepinger and didn't care too much for Sosa. And it looks like I'm right so far. But if St. Louis can't beat Houston, I don't think they deserve to make the wild card. You want to be in the playoffs playing against the best teams in the league and you can't beat Houston? That it shouldn't be allowed. Houston's awful. And they're losing early, already given up five. And Matt Holliday already taken out of the game. He's been struggling with injury. It looks like it could have been an injury-related pulling of the game there. And I tell you what, St. Louis better get their act together because they have a chance to tie the wild cards tonight and go into the final day tomorrow with a win and in situation. If the Cardinals win, they'll force the playoff. And if the Braves lose again, which they very well could because they're playing the Phillies, then the Cardinals could sneak into these playoffs, even though the Braves have been dominating the standings since about July. And that would just be horrendous for them. So that's our wild card update for now. We're going to get to a break here on the Sports Report with DJB on radio.dominican.edu. His temple was his cage. He looked upon his work, and he had it his way. Yeah, I will not be changed. My friend, he paid. Oh, ooh, my work was changed. My friend, he paid. Oh, ooh, my work was changed. Change, change, change. Yeah, when he paid. Oh, ooh, my work was changed. Yeah, 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 yeah. And everything's so real.
Painful, painful, painful now. And everything's so
JB back here with you on the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. And I ended the last segment with some baseball talk, and I want to keep that baseball talk going, but this time with the Giants. Yeah, I know. Season's over, they've been eliminated, and it's a tough pill for me to swallow, but it shouldn't have to be tough to look at the lineup now the way it is, and it still is. Bochy's been doing this to me and all the Giants fans all season long, just lineups that you just can't wrap your head around. Only he can wrap his head around it, but that's because his head's big enough. That's not really a smash on Bochy. I love him. He brought me a World Series title. But when you're eliminated and there's two games left, let the kids have some run. Let the kids play. Nope, not with Bochy. You're going to have Torres leading off in center field. Nope, you shouldn't play Darren Ford. Find out if he's going to be something you can use at the MLB level. You should keep playing Torres, who disappointed you this year. I mean, there's two games left. Maybe we can win 10 in one game and get back into the playoffs. And then Burris, has he really ever played well? No. But should he get a shot? Yeah. Should he get more of a shot than Fontenot? Yeah. And Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I know Fontenot's your boy, but I'm not playing him right now. Beltran batting third, you got to do that. These are the last 2 days you're going to have him. You traded for him, you might as well use him. Then Pablo batting fourth. I'm surprised I have a problem with Pablo batting fourth, but he's playing first base, which means Pill isn't playing. And why isn't Pill playing? This is our opportunity to find out what Pill's got. He's been producing. He's been darn near the only person driving in runs for this team. And we're going to bench him and play Pablo at first in a game that doesn't matter when he's got that shoulder that needs to be surgically repaired. That doesn't make any sense to me. Now, Gillespie playing third, I like, batting fifth. Let's find out what the kid's got. Throw him in there. He's got a couple hits earlier in the season. There's only one way to find out if someone can play at the major league level. You got to play him, which is what they're doing with Brandon Belt in left field, which is great. I mean, coming into the season, the kid was going to be the new first baseman that brought us to the World Series again. And now he's kind of fallen off the map, hitting in the low 200s. But he's not going to do any better unless he gets the at-bats. Crawford batting seventh, playing shortstop. That's the way it should be. Cabrera is not going to be around next year. No need to find out what he's got. You need to know what Crawford's got. Whiteside batting eighth. You don't have any other options. Hector Sanchez, I don't like personally. He may be able to swing the bat a little bit. It looks like he's got a decent approach. But he seems to be a really lazy catcher, and I don't like to see him behind the plate. And then Bumgarner batting ninth. This is his last start of the season. And I'm sure he's just ready to get to next year, get Posey and Freddie Sanchez back in the lineup, and maybe we'll score some runs for him. But my main problems are with Ford and Pill. Ford has ridiculous speed. He has speed that can win you a game. He did it last year and during the playoff run. You put him into pinch run, and that would win you a game. Not a hit, not a great play. Stealing a base and scoring on a sac fly would win us games. What if he can hit 280? That's a great leadoff hitter. If he can hit 280 and steal 50 bases, we'd be money. But we'll never know because we don't play him. And then Burris, yeah, I know I went off on Fontenot a little bit. I don't think that matters too much because I don't think Burris has the game to start at the major league level, but he needs his chances, especially when games don't matter. But I know Bochy has a thing for playing veterans, so this is what that is. But it's mostly Pill. I love Brett Pill. I think he's got a beautiful swing. He seems to have his head on straight. He's got the approach. He's everything everybody thought Belt was going to be, except he's actually performing. But he's young, and that's not the Giants' way. We like old retread players. And once a young guy shows something, oh, send him down to the minors. Belt, the third time he got called up, got three hits in two games. Better sit him down and play Huff because you don't want that young guy to emerge and become something. And it just frustrates me that even in games that don't matter, Bochy can still throw out a lineup that makes no sense. And now we're going to get you back to the wild card races and update you again. Boston and Baltimore are in the top of the seventh. Boston's still holding their lead. They're up 7-4 now. And all signs point to them being able to hold on to that, which would be huge for that franchise. Atlanta is in the top of the ninth now with Philadelphia batting up 7-0. And they're going to need a miracle of a comeback if they're going to come back and win this one. They're going to need to score 8 in one inning at this time. And if he does it, if they do it, then they deserve the playoffs. If not, they're going to be battling for their playoff lives tomorrow. The Yankees are still up on the Tampa Bay Rays 3-2. Although in the bottom of the seventh, the Rays got BJ Upton on first with Evan Longoria at the plate. And the Yankees have Rafael Soriano in, their high-paid setup man, in an inning early. This just shows that they don't want the Rays in the playoffs. I think this is a very interesting move. The Yankees are going to bet on beating the Red Sox in the playoffs because they're trying to make sure the Rays lose this game. And I think that's a pretty good move because the Red Sox can have the psyche problems coming into New York. They've had them before. The Rays are hot. They're young. They can come in. They don't care. They play that loose style with manager Joe Maddon, very hands-off manager. They don't dress up when they're on the road. And Evan Longoria just walked, so now it's runners on first and second for the Rays with none away. Young right fielder from Detroit, Matt Joyce, at the plate, trying to get something done, at least tie this game. He's batting fourth today, so the chances of a bunt are low. But it's possible. You never know with Joe Maddon wearing those stylish black glasses. You never know what that guy's going to pull out. And then there's the Cardinals. And the Cardinals have tied that game 5-5 in that top of the fourth inning that they were in when we went to break. They scored the fifth run, and now they have runners on second and third with two outs. And the young third baseman, David Freese, at the plate. Freese is another one of those young players, sweet swing, good approach, one of those players the Giants wouldn't want on their team. And as I speak, he strikes out swinging, so don't pay attention to that. Maybe the Giants would want him on their team. But the Cardinals score five in the fifth to come back and tie that one. So they got some fight in them. They know their backs are up against the wall, and they don't want to just let it go. We're going to keep eyes on this Tampa Bay game because this one looks intense. It's going to go right down to the wire. Final innings. We're going to get out and go to break. When we come back, I'll have an update for you on that Tampa Bay game. We'll go over sports news and notes for you. I'm DJ B here on the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. JB back here with you on the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. And I am not lying to you. Within seconds of going to break, Matt Joyce, the young right fielder I talked about, batting fourth. I said he wasn't going to bunt, and he showed me why. He hit a 3-run homer to give Tampa Bay a 5-3 lead in the bottom of the seventh. And, folks, that's baseball right there. You bring in your $10 million man, Rafael Soriano, the setup man who would close on almost any other team, an inning early just to make sure you lock a team down and make sure they don't go into the playoffs. And he puts two on and gives up a homer, gives up the lead. That seems to be how it works around this time. I mean, this is playoff push time. This is not when normal things happen. So Tampa Bay, with a 5-3 lead now, canceling out the 7-4 lead that Boston has heading into the bottom of the seventh. Boston needs to hold on to this lead now. They cannot afford to give the Rays the upper hand, considering the Red Sox have had the upper hand since about August. And the NL scores, nothing has changed. Philadelphia is still up on Atlanta 7-0, finally heading into the bottom of the ninth. So Philadelphia seems to be poised to put Atlanta out of their misery, send them home with another loss. They're fourth straight, and they are just in struggle mode like no other. They're going to come out with a win or go home situation tomorrow. And St. Louis, still 5-5, now in the bottom of the fourth with the Houston Astros. The Astros, who just gave up 5 in the last inning, had a 5-0 lead, gave up 5. And that is your update. Now we're going to get to news and notes from around the sports world. Giants fans, Brian Wilson is done for the season. He will not pitch again. Then again, the season is 2 more games, but it's still notable. They had a save situation last night and used Javier Lopez and Santiago Casilla. That causes reason for real concern about Wilson's elbow. I'm concerned because he's a stud and I want him on the field. And he's been out way too long. I'm hoping surgery is not in his future, because that's a guy the Giants need at the end of their bullpen. He's crazy. He's exactly what you want from a closer. He throws hard. He does not care who's at the plate. He's going to challenge them. And this is just bad news for the Giants. Kenny Britt, wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans out of Rutgers, stud wide receiver, continues the trend of studs in the NFL this year. He tore his ACL and his MCL, and he's done for the season. And talked about it last week. I think it's because of the offseason lockout and people not being ready to play. And this just proves my point even more. This is a little bit more of a freak accident than the Jamal Charles one, for example. But it's just an alarming number of season-ending injuries in the NFL this year. The 49ers, who won again this Saturday, which I'll get to later, they unveiled plans for their new stadium, which most people found odd, especially since they don't have the funding for it. But they unveiled the plans for it anyway, and it is elaborate, immaculate even, sticking with the E words. They have 165 luxury suites, which is just more than anybody would ever need. And then the catch by Dwight Clark in 1981 that sent the Niners to their first Super Bowl, it's up at a 5-story level. But it's not just at the 5-story level, it's a 5-story mural of Dwight Clark, which is just incredible. And if it looks as good as it sounds, it could get the funding. They want it down in Santa Clara by the practice facility. I don't know how the naming would work, if they would be the Santa Clara 49ers or the San Francisco 49ers of Santa Clara. Either way, I don't like it, but they couldn't get a new stadium in San Francisco, so I guess you don't have a choice. The Marlins are making other news other than the potential signing of Ozzie Guillen, which people have been talking about all year now. They signed their super utility man, Omar Infante, who they got from the Braves this offseason in the Dan Uggla trade, to a 2-year, $8 million contract, which is great for Infante. You could play him anywhere on the field that isn't pitcher or catcher, and you could bat him anywhere in the lineup. He'll get on base or drive in a run. It's just the guy you want on your team. And he's $8 million richer now. In basketball news, Jay-Z decided that when the Nets move to Brooklyn, they are going to stay the Nets. Some people thought he might have changed the name, wanted to leave the Nets in New Jersey when they moved, but he likes the Nets, so he's going to keep it on the move to Brooklyn. And if Jay-Z wants it, he's going to get it. Case A being Beyonce. And the Warriors hired former Suns executive Rick Welts to be team president and COO. Now, he was wildly successful with the Suns. Those were all the years they were making the playoffs. But what bothered me was a lot of his press conference focused on the fact that he is openly gay. And people asking if Joe Lacob, new Warriors owner, was going to have a problem with it. And he was saying, of course not. He even called one reporter basically an idiot for questioning whether or not that would make a difference. And I honestly don't see how it would. And I know it's probably just reporters doing their job, trying to incite some emotion out of Lacob, make him mad, paint him as a bad person in the media. But just the reasoning for the question is just frustrating. And it's bad that someone would be doubted for that in a situation where it makes no difference. And that's just kind of where society is right now. And on that note, we're going to get you back to the wild card races, because if you're in the sports world right now, everything centers around these wild card races. So we're going to get back to them one time before we hit a break. Boston is holding their 7-4 lead, and there's two outs with a runner on second, Vlad Guerrero at the plate. So the Orioles threatening with two outs to get another run. Philadelphia up 7-1. Atlanta got another run back on a Martin Brado home run, but they need six runs with two outs left. I'll put my money on Philadelphia. New York still down 3-5 after that Matt Joyce home run. That was huge. Tampa Bay looking to stay tied with Boston in the wild card race. And St. Louis, Houston still 5-5 in the fifth. A lot of fives in that game. St. Louis needs to win. And if St. Louis wins, as it currently is, they will be tied at top of the NL wild card going into the last game of the season. Exciting stuff going on there. I'm going to hit a break now. This is the Sports Report with DJ B on radio.dominican.edu. DJB back here with you on the Sports Report on radio.dominican.edu. The Philadelphia Phillies just finished off their game with the Atlanta Braves, winning that one 7-1. So the Braves dropped down a half a game closer to St. Louis, who is still tied 5-5. St. Louis pulls this one out over the Astros. They will come into a tie for the wild card race. Now, in studio, very lucky to have DJ P-Ab and T-Baby here to talk some sports with me. Fellas, how you guys doing?
What's up, B? Doing good, man.
Yeah, good. It's good to be here.
All right, perfect. I wanted to start with the San Francisco 49ers pulling out an ugly 13-8 win against the Bengals. But when you're struggling for wins, you don't care if they're ugly or pretty. They just got to come. What were you guys' thoughts about that game? What did you come away with?
Well, I mean, you got to cover. It's very ugly. It was a difficult game to watch. And I'm a Niner fan. I'm rooting for them. But, geez, that was a tough game to watch. But, like you said, a win's a win. In the NFL, any given Sunday, any team can beat you. So, even though it's Cincinnati, who's a weak opponent, it's just good to get a win. It's good to be over 500 if you're San Francisco.
I mean, for a San Francisco diehard fan, I just got to say, it's good to just watch them win. It's just tough to look at them last season having an 0-4 start. Mm-hmm. It's just terrible to watch. But, hey, 2-1 with a new head coach. Well, let's see how they do against Philly.
Absolutely. And what I want to get to before we talk about this last game is where the Niners are right now. They have stayed in Youngstown, Ohio this whole week, and they've been practicing there, and they haven't given a whole lot on their theory of it. But I got to think last year, every time they went east, they just did terrible. Mm-hmm. They're 1-0 on the east this year. Maybe it was jet lag. Do you guys like this idea that Harbaugh has of staying on the East Coast?
I think it can't hurt, definitely, especially considering the lack of success that they had last season on the East Coast. So I think it's good that Harbaugh's coming and implementing some new systems into the Niners. I think it's definitely good for the team.
And remember, Harbaugh's a Michigan guy, played at Michigan, mm-hmm. and also he's just showing them ropes how to maybe succeed in the East Coast. I mean, East Coast, different weather here.
All right, and now let's get to the Cincinnati game, okay. Which we won. We won. We're up 2-1. That's the overall record. First place in the division, which is great to hear, no matter when in the season it is. But I want to talk about individual performances. Alex Smith went 20 for 30 for 201 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. Yeah. Wasn't impressed, wasn't down on him. What did you guys think?
Yeah, Smith, to me, this season, he just doesn't do much right, but he doesn't do much wrong. He's the perfect example this season of a game manager, which you can say is a good thing because he doesn't make the key mistakes, but then in certain situations, it's going to hurt you if you can't make the big throw. But to this point, he's doing okay. You can say he's doing well.
I mean, in all honesty, I was never sold on Alex Smith.
Me neither, yeah.
Also, I mean, I wouldn't say he's great. He's good, not great. I mean, he's the type of guy that can manage a team. Mm-hmm. He could give you a few wins. He seems like a quarterback that could get you in the season about 8-8.
He made pretty good. I don't know if he's even good, Smith. I think
I'll say
he's
pretty
between
good.
Decent and good, I think. He's like pretty good.
He's a better Rex Grossman. He's like okay. He plays like Mark Sanchez.
I can see that.
Yeah, good points. Smith, very accurate that game. 67% completion. That's always something nice to see from a quarterback. Yep. But he did it with getting 200 yards, which he doesn't do a whole lot. Most of his completions come from drop-offs, screens, and that's how he gets his completion numbers
up. Five-yard
plays. It was nice to see some actual throws from him. P-Ab, I know you were mentioning the one to Vernon Davis, who, speaking of Vernon Davis, went 8 catches for 114 yards. And it seems like in other games he doesn't even target Vernon Davis. And on broadcast, that's all they talk about. This guy's special. Yeah. Do you think he's not targeting him? Or what do you think is the deal with not throwing to Vernon Davis?
Well, for me, I just think after that meeting Vernon Davis had with Jim Harbaugh, that got Davis more involved, and it shows leadership. I mean, he didn't come in diva like, he didn't come in like the old Vernon Davis ways when he had the dreads. He came in respectful to
hating on the dreads.
I am actually, but he came in actually to Jim Harbaugh, says, you know what? I'm a team leader. I need to get involved. I need to help this team win, and he did that. 114 yards. Mm-hmm. What else can you do? Best tight end in the league.
Yeah, and to me, Davis, I agree with you, best tight end in the league, and the most athletic, and the most talented.
Even by far,
over
athletically.
Gates, yeah, whoever you want to throw in there. Vernon Davis is an absolute savage. He has the body of an animal, and he's the speed of a wide receiver. He's an incredible athlete. And Alex Smith should be targeting him at least 10 times a game, no question. He should be getting at least 5-6 catches every game.
I mean, look what Romo does with Jason Witten. That's his favorite target. I wish Alex Smith could do that with Vernon Davis. And Davis could he's more powerful than a safety, faster than a linebacker. I do not understand why Alex Smith does not go to him, just as a safety target.
Yeah, my theory on this is in most offenses, the tight end is not the number one guy in the progression. And Smith, a combination of his happy feet and not getting time in the pocket, doesn't get past progression one. If he's lucky, he'll get to progression two.
True.
So he doesn't have time to go down the list and find Vernon Davis, even when from TV he looks wide open.
That's a very good point, and that could be it exactly. Because sometimes when you're watching Niner games, you feel like Davis is lost in the game plan. Like, two quarters will go by, he doesn't even get looked at, and he's just blocking, and he's just running aimless route. Sometimes even open, Smith doesn't find him. But that could definitely be a reason why, because of Smith's kind of lack of reading the offense.
Yeah. And also, you said Alex Smith has happy feet. Another quarterback from the 49ers past days, Jeff Garcia, happy feet.
Very happy feet.
Very happy feet.
So does Peyton Manning.
Yeah, but there's a time where Jeff Garcia really had a good year. He had two good seasons.
Yeah.
After that, his happy feet kept going after Terrell Owens called him a rat whatsoever. But
sad feet at that point.
Yeah, it was sad. It was sad after that. But still, I mean, it's hard when you have a quarterback who has happy feet. You can't aim properly.
Yeah, and another thing people were really looking forward to coming into this year was the use of tight ends in the Jim Harbaugh offense, because at Stanford, every game he had five different tight ends with four or five catches. And I think Delanie Walker is a very good tight end. And I haven't seen anything from him. I've only seen him thrown to maybe three or four times this season. I don't have the stats on that. It's just what I feel like.
Yeah. And Walker's been good for years for the Niners. And he could be a starting tight end on a lot of NFL rosters for sure.
I mean, honestly, I think Delanie Walker is the little brother to Vernon Davis, I think. They almost exactly the same, except Vernon Davis just a lot more athletic.
Yeah, and they're both jacked. They're specimens.
Honestly, they
yeah.
Delanie Walker, a wide receiver in college, so another target.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I want to switch it over to the defense, which didn't give up a touchdown, gave up the two field goals. They played very well.
Yes.
And we had Navarro Bowman, who PAB, me and you talked about him last week, how we thought he was filling in perfectly in the Keo Spikes role, who people thought we were going to miss. And he actually led the team in tackles, got more than Patrick Willis. What did you think about his play this last weekend?
Navarro Bowman getting 11 tackles. He's honestly outright, I'll even say this, he's a stud. I'm serious. This guy's a diamond in the rough. You found him in the third round. How many third round athletes do you find leading the team in tackles? He reminds me of a Derek Smith the Niners had, who led the team in tackles.
That's a good call. And one of the downsides on him as an inside linebacker was too small. Mm-hmm. There are too many examples of too many people in every sport that you call them too small and they come back and they bite you in the butt. Mm-hmm. That's just not something you want to lose. And then Carlos Rogers, who we also talked about last week, liking him more than Nate Clements, came through with the interception along with Reggie Smith. And the defense was looking good, T-Baby.
Yeah, defense looked really good. And when you see that play on Rogers' interception, and Jim Moore was given all kinds of props when he got it. He just read the route extremely well, taking full advantage of a rookie quarterback. And just to backtrack for a quick moment on what you're saying on Bowman, it's definitely true that when you draft a player, you don't really know how they're going to turn out. And Bowman's a classic example of that. And there's all kind of examples, third, fourth, fifth round picks who are just dark horses in the NFL. But Niners defense looking very good this year. Very happy to see that.
Yeah, the only problem I had, no sacks. I didn't even see Aldon Smith. I didn't even recognize if he was on the field or not. And the sack differential was awful. Smith getting hit six times, Niners getting none. That's something you're going to have to work on, especially against a team like the Bengals. Now you're going to go into the Eagles game. Vic, is his hand broken? Is it a contusion? Is it just a bruise? Is it just a ploy? Do they want us to think it's not broken, so we plan for Vic and then don't bring him out? What do you think is going on there?
Also, I think the Niners, I'm going to say this very boldly. The Niners will at least get three sacks against the Eagles.
Yeah.
If the Giants could hurt Vic that way, that much, I'm telling you, the Niners defense, they just look too strong to me.
I wouldn't compare Giants and Niners pass rush, though.
I mean, no. Yeah, I wouldn't. And but yes. You have to find, look at this. Abreu Franklin out. Isaac Sopawaga in. This guy's a
I'll
lot
give
bigger.
You this. Eagles, they are soft. That's what Trent Dilfer was watching this weekend. Trent Dilfer saying Eagles offensive are soft.
Line.
They don't have that push
they
on
don't.
Defense or offense. But here's the thing. I don't see the Eagles going 1-3. That's
I
the, my
either.
Thing. I just don't see them going 1-3. So I think it's going to be a tough game for San Francisco.
And I think coming into the season, I wouldn't have seen San Francisco going 3-1.
Exactly, yeah.
But all that makes me think San Francisco is going to win.
Because
the fact that that's what we think.
But
yep.
I mean, look at the Buffalo Bills. They're 3-0. No one expected
that.
And
the Lions, 3-0.
Lions, I could see.
Yeah, there's
Bills, no.
But who knows? The Niners could do that. They could maybe upset Philly.
And even Falcons, 1-2. There's some teams struggling. You know, Saints are almost going to be 1-2 there. So it's kind of a... It's flipped. The NFL's flipped this season.
The only thing that scares me is DeSean Jackson. Niners pass defense has never been good for years.
Man, when you talk about pass and DeSean Jackson, all I can think of is Shiloh Rashal And that's who we took over DeSean Jackson. And yeah, you guys just showed the exact reaction any Niners fan would have. Oh, man. Are you kidding me?
I'm a big Cal fan. So I was at all those games in Jackson return, like 80-yard touchdowns against Tennessee. He was a savage in college. Niners definitely could have grabbed him. Could have grabbed Rodgers a few years back as well. Just going to throw that out there.
Not only Shiloh Rochelle. I mean, we drafted Kentuan Ballmer. Yeah, Kentuan. We don't even know where he's been. Yeah. He's in Seattle now, not doing nothing. So.
We just kicked him off the team.
Yeah.
Okay, now cut the Niners talk short because I want to talk Warriors with you guys.
Okay.
The season may or may not come, but no matter what happens with the Warriors, all you're going to hear about is Monte Ellis. Should he stay or should he go? First, I want to hear what you guys have to say about it.
I want to keep Ellis, honestly. I think definitely don't trade him.
No. You trade this man. This guy's a diva.
He's a diva.
Yes, he's a diva. He got into many arguments with Don Nelson.
Nelson was a terrible coach.
He was. But you still don't argue with the coach.
He didn't even tuck in his shirt.
He didn't. And he was very ugly. But still, I'll tell you this. Monte Ellis needs to be traded. This guy's a bad influence on Stephen Curry. He said he doesn't want Stephen on the team before draft day. And also, I think that the Warriors may need more size, maybe at the small forward position. Put Durrell right at the shooting guard position. If you could get Andre Iguodala for that trade, or maybe an O.J. Mayo, a Mayo and...
So Ellis is more productive than Mayo.
Hold on, I'm saying a Mayo and...
A
Gasol,
big, probably.
A Mayo and
Gasol. Mayo and Gasol for Ellis?
If you can trade Biedrins, package in Biedrins and maybe Biedrins someone
right
else.
Now?
And maybe someone else. 3 for 2. It could happen.
Who wants him and his 20% free throw percentage?
I wouldn't,
like 10
but maybe
years.
Grizzlies would.
We don't. Wouldn't. Forget about wouldn't. We don't want
yeah,
him.
Yeah, we don't
yeah,
want
no
him.
No one wants Beads right now.
But where I come in on this is I don't think you can keep Curry and Ellis together. And if it came down to it, I'm keeping Curry.
True.
Because Ellis doesn't play the pure point guard. And I don't like undersized shooting guards because... Yeah, they may get their 30 points against another guy, but they're going to give up 40, and you come out minus 10 on that. So, T-Baby, you said that you would keep Ellis.
Yes.
Does that mean you would get rid of Curry?
No.
You would keep that backcourt
keep
together?
Keep them both, yes.
So, would your solution then, because their defense is pitiful, would
yeah,
your
the
solution
defense is atrocious.
Be bulk up the front court so that even if people blow past Curry and Ellis, you're going to get banged on the way to the hoop.
Yeah, absolutely bulk up because Lee needs some help out there. Lee's the only guy grabbing boards. I just don't think what you would get in turn for Ellis would be better than Ellis. Like, if the trade is proper, I would trade Ellis, but I just don't think they're going to... Like, if they trade straight up Iguodala for Ellis, is that going to mean more wins for the Warriors? I just don't see it. I don't foresee it at
honestly,
all.
Honestly, it may not, but I'm talking about in the future. What if... I mean, Peter Guber, Joe Lacob, good owners. You can tell right away they want to win. They sold it to the right
people.
Everyone
wants to win.
But these guys are actually involved in the process, T.
Okay.
I mean,
don't use my first name on air.
Okay, baby. They're doing all they can. They hired Jerry West.
Okay.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, great.
And then also getting the Suns CEO as your COO. So I don't know what the Warriors are not doing right.
Yeah.
If they can get free agency when this lockout is over, if they could get at least role players, this team will look great.
Absolutely. I mean, that's another problem they have is no bench. But what?
Yeah.
Every time I talk about trading Ellis and someone goes, he is going to be a star. He scores. You cannot stop him. I bring up the Denver Nuggets. What happened to them when they got rid of Carmelo Anthony? Is Gallinari as good as Anthony? No. Is Wilson Chandler as good as Anthony? No. What happened when they got those two and got rid of the black hole in the offense that is Anthony, which is also what Ellis is? That team took off, and they seemed unbeatable.
That's a fair point, but they also got Wilson Chandler. They got some key pieces. If the Warriors can get three pieces.
Wilson Chandler is not better than Andre Iguodala.
Straight up, he's not, but with Gallinari and who else they get? Felton. If Warriors can get three key pieces...
Well, which they won't because Monte's no Carmelo. But I think if you can put Iguodala in this offense, the playmaker he is, the defender, the length he'd give us alongside Darrell Wright, then it would just come down to signing the key backup players that Piab was talking about.
And I'm not just saying Iguodala. There's probably other players out there in the market that Joe Lacob has something cooking in that stove he's got.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling
he's
you.
He's got
this,
a big stove.
I'm
too.
Telling
huge.
You, Joe Lacob has a plan, and I believe in him. I'm serious.
And don't get me wrong. I like Iguodala a lot. I've liked ever since University of Arizona. He puts up triple-doubles, crazy numbers. He's an athlete, and he put fans in the seats. He's a very exciting player. I just don't know if we can do Ellis for Iggy straight up. I need more pieces.
They might not. I mean, Portland's really looking for a deal. I mean, if you could get – if you can get their role players, bring them to the Golden State.
Absolutely, because with Portland, they're the opposite of the Warriors. They have too much bench.
Yeah.
And they need someone to take over with Brandon Roy, with the unfortunate injuries he's had to go through. Maybe they would kick some role players over, and that would round out a team. But what I like about the Warriors now, for so many years, Chris Cohan had it just Larry Riley making all the decisions. It seems like the GM now is a three-headed monster up there with Bob Myers and Kirk Lacob being added to it, mm-hmm. Joe Lacob's son. It just seems like we're going to be able to scour the league for players so much more than we were before.
And also, I love the Bob Myers son. This guy's a sports agent. He's Darrell Wright's former agent. But this guy going in your front office, he might talk to players just to come in and visit. The players wouldn't even visit before because it's the Warriors. But now since he's there, oh no, you might get like surprise signings.
Yeah, you just need the lockout to end, and then all starts from there.
Yeah, I think you bring any player in, you sit him down with Bob Myers, who knows the art of the deal as good as anybody right now, and the logo, Jerry West, telling him to come play for me because I like what you got. I think that's going to be start getting big names out to Golden State.
Oh, and I love their draft pick, Klay Thompson.
Oh, I love Thompson.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Why I say trade Ellis. If Thompson's there, you could trade Ellis.
Which is also why you could wait till halfway through the season. Mm-hmm. Give Klay Thompson used to it without having to be a starter, and then make the transition.
Well, Thompson could play the three, couldn't he?
He's
6'7".
Absolutely.
He can play a three, but I mean...
And let's get right on the bench there, six man. Yeah. Like
all right, hold on, guys. Hold on. I'm going to cut you off here because I love Klay Thompson too, and I'm going to want to talk with you guys about him next week.
Okay.
And why don't you guys tell the people what's coming up next?
You got to pee.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what are you talking about is coming up with me, DJ P-Up, and my boy, DJ T-Baby.
It's three people you just named. You said me and P-Up and T-Baby.
That's right. Well, what are you talking about is coming up next? What time, T-Baby?
7 o'clock p.m.
Ends at 8. Tailgate.
Ends at 8.
After us.
Yeah.
We signing off. B, you
We're
got
done.
It.
I wouldn't want to miss that one, folks. That's going to be it for the sports report here. I'm DJ B on radio.dominican.edu. We'll see you next week.